for this morning, Daniel chapter 2, starting with verse 36. How many of you live in a home where Legos also live? You've got Legos there? Of those who do, have you ever stepped on a Lego in your bare feet? If you have, you might be able to identify with these folk. One gentleman said, "What I remember most about Legos, that little yellow slice of the pie, building things according to the instructions." I'm thinking this is a male that wrote this. The orange slice next to it, building whatever I wanted. The green slice, searching for that one elusive piece in my giant box of Legos. And the rest of the pie is consumed with screaming and agony after stepping on a Lego brick while barefoot. This fellow says there are three levels of pain a human being can endure. There's regular pain, excruciating pain, and stepping on a Lego pain. When times get tough, Legos is a good substitute for a burglar alarm. As long as you remember where you place them. One enterprising lady decided to do something useful with her son's collection of Legos after he went away to college. Now, why are we talking so much about Legos this morning? Well, about 2,600 years ago, the Lord gave an emperor a vision about what was going to happen in time's future. And basically, it was a vision of a giant Lego guy, a composite figure. And by the different sections on this structure, the future was told. And we're going to talk about that a little bit this morning. The fact is, we've actually been seeing the figure put together. We've seen it through history, and we're actually quite possibly seeing the finishing touches being put on this statue. What does that mean to us? The clock is running out. It's time to get right with God, and it's time to make sure that everybody else you know and love is ready too. Daniel chapter 2, verses 36 through 44. This was the dream, and now we will interpret it to the king. "Your Majesty, you are the King of Kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he has placed all mankind and the beasts of the field and the birds in the sky. Wherever they live, he has made you ruler over them all. You are that head of gold. After you, another kingdom will arise inferior to yours. Next, a third kingdom, one of bronze, will rule over the whole earth. Finally, there will be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, for iron breaks and smashes everything. And as iron breaks things to pieces, so it will crush and break all the others. Just as you saw that the feet and toes are partly of baked clay and partly of iron, so this will be a divided kingdom. Yet it will have some of the strength of iron in it, even as you saw iron mixed with clay. As the toes were partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. And just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, so the people will be a mixture and will not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever." So, Father, we bring the word before you this morning, understanding we need to be careful. We always need to be careful when we say that we're speaking on your behalf. But that doubles when we talk about prophecy. Watch our words here today, God, and help us to be careful to speak the truth and to receive the right application for our lives. And we'll thank you for these helps in Jesus' name. Amen. Israel was, of course, God's chosen nation. He blessed her with this beautiful slice of territory east of the Mediterranean Sea. There they were to prosper and be blessed forever. The only conditions were that they loved and served the Lord their God. Unfortunately, she kept going a different direction. She turned to idols, false religions, evil practices. And finally, God said, "That's enough. I said, all I can stand and I can't stand no more." And he raised up the Assyrians. The Assyrians went in and took away the northern kingdom of Israel. Off into exile, it was a miserable, it was a terrible invasion. Most lost their lives. Those that survived were treated in the rudest fashion imaginable. And that was supposed to be a sign to the southern kingdom of Judah. Judah is where Jerusalem is and where the temple was and so on. And they were doing a lot better than the northern kingdom had been doing. And God said, "I want you to see this. Pay attention. If you continue to sin like your sister sinned, you're going to get the same treatment." Well, the warning lasted for a while, and Judah continued for a time to serve the Lord. But not too long down the road, she followed in her sister's footsteps, idolatry, immorality, the whole works. Started to work its way into Judah. And God raised up another nation, the nation of Babylon. Babylon overthrew Assyria, took over all the holdings that she had held for so long, and then also invaded Judah and carried off many of the items that they used in temple worship, all of the gold, silver, bronze, and such that were at the temple site, and simply leveled Jerusalem. And destroyed much of what was there. Many people died again, and others were carried off into exile. From there, Babylon became the ruler of the known world. It was a kingdom that became an empire. Nebuchadnezzar, her king, became an emperor. He was a king, became an emperor, which is a king of kings. He ruled over all of those other places and all of those other lands. And one night, this king of kings, this Nebuchadnezzar, had a terrible dream that just vexed him sore. It wasn't your typical, "Oh, wow, man, that was a whopper." This one left an impression on him. He remembered exactly what it was like when he woke up. He was probably in a cold sweat, shaking, and everything else. And he marveled and wondered, what in the world could this dream possibly mean? So he called together his magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers. Today we would call them congressmen and senators and, you know. But he calls all these people in and he says, "I've had this dream. You need to tell me what I dreamed and then tell me what it means." And they all smiled back and said, "O king, live forever." That's a good one. Almost had us there. "You tell us what the dream is. This is how this works. You tell us what the dream is and we'll tell you what it means." He said, "I know how you guys work. You can make anything up. The only way I'm going to know you really know what you're talking about is if you tell me the dream first and then the interpretation." And then all of a sudden a smile left their face. They became ashen. They began to shiver. He said, "If you don't come up with the right answer, you're all going to die." See, they had all been on the payroll for so long. And he decided it was time for them to earn their money. Oh, man, the edict went out. You're all going to die. Daniel heard about it. He told the steward, "Ask the king for just a little bit more time. I'd like to speak to him." And Daniel went in and he said, "King, give me just a little time. I can't tell you your dream. I can't interpret it. But the living God in heaven can do these things, and he's going to reveal this to you." Daniel came back after God gave him the dream and the interpretation, and that's where we picked up our text for this morning. And finally, Daniel strides into the king's chamber with confidence, knowing that he had seen it all. In his dream, Nebuchadnezzar had seen a large statue, an enormous, dazzling, something awesome in appearance to behold. Its head was made of pure gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron, and partly of baked clay. As Nebuchadnezzar watched, a rock was cut out of a mountain, but not by human hands. It came down and it smashed the statue at the feet, and it all crumbled. It became as fine as dust. The wind came by and blew it all away. No trace left. But the rock that had crushed it grew into a mountain that filled the entire earth. And there was the end of his dream. So Daniel starts to talk to the king. This is no ordinary dream, sir. God has shown you what is to take place in future generations here on the earth. King, as you laid on your bed at night, your mind wandered to future things, and you were considering what happens next, and God gave you this dream as an answer to what you were asking. Each component, each body part of the statue represents a different kingdom that is to arise. The gold head, chest and arms of silver, belly and thigh of bronze, legs, once you said eggs, it's hard to get that out of there. Legs of iron, feet of iron and clay. Five body parts, five compositions of metals, five empires. Wallace Odom, in his book, Unto the Messiah, gives us the criteria that shows us what kingdoms qualify to be part of this statue. First of all, each would become the predominant world power of its day. Makes sense, it's an empire. Secondly, each would conquer or subdue Israel, exerting control over Jerusalem. Aha, that's important, because there's been a large chunk of history where Israel wasn't a nation. And finally, the last will be a composite of the former kingdoms. There would be elements of the last that were true of all of the other empires before it. Now, Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel were given this chart and shown this for a reason. Now, to them, it was future. Didn't really mean a whole lot. What if you happen to get a tip that, I don't know, 1,000 years after you're dead, real estate in the swampland of Florida is going to be very valuable? Really wouldn't mean much to you, right? So who is this really benefiting? The people that come later and are able to see, okay, you hit a home run here, you hit a home run there, and there and there. Maybe I ought to pay attention to what you have to say about the day in which I'm living right now. What might just be the next thing to take place in all of the earth? They've been given the first part. You, O king, are that head of gold, the Babylonian Empire. It's beautiful. It's strong. It's mighty. It's absolute. And all authority God has given to you, king, and to this people. Now we have to fill in the rest. For them, it was future. Maybe I ought to start drinking coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker, but it might be time. It was history, future for them. Now we look back and see how we fill in the gaps. The empire that came in and took the place of Babylon was the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians, the arms and the chest of silver, the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. And if you're a real student of this stuff, you read the rest of Daniel, you'll hear other layers put on this prophecy. Other of his prophecies tie right into this one, showing you in very clear language why it was the Medes and the Persians. We know that. Why it was Greece that came after the Medes and the Persians and displaced them. You've heard of the fellow Alexander the Great. He was prophesied in the book of Daniel hundreds of years before he was even born. Not the name Alexander the Great, you understand, but what he did. Greece came to supplant and become the ruling empire of the day. The legs of iron are Rome. Rome came in and took over where Greece left off, and took over what Greece had taken over. Rome was very powerful and strong. She ruled with a rod of iron. Wasn't so much into developing culture. She kind of borrowed that from the Greeks. And it was the Greek culture. You'll remember that during Jesus's time, everybody spoke Greek. You may have had your own local language, Hebrew or what have you, but everybody also learned to speak the language of the empire, because getting along with the empire could be the difference between life and death. So they developed Greek culture, but then they took this empire thing to a whole new level, and they ruled, as it were, with a fist of iron. Stronger, but less culturally distinct from the others. Now, you might remember one of the qualifications to be a kingdom on the chart was that the empire would rule over and control Israel and Jerusalem. Rome not only ruled over Israel, she destroyed Israel. In 70 AD, marched in with her troops and said, "We've had enough of you people. Can't take any more. You're done here." They leveled Jerusalem. They leveled the temple. They crucified many, killed others, and scattered the rest over the known world. So for nearly 2,000 years, there was no Israel. For nearly 2,000 years, there was a gap between the kingdoms that were going to rule and the succession of kingdoms that Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream, and until this final kingdom is to arise. During those 2,000 years, there have been empires. Have you heard of the Ottoman Empire ruling out of Turkey? Have you heard of the British Empire? It had been said the sun never sets on the British Empire. She had holdings all around the world, was one of the greatest empires ever, but doesn't make the statue. Why? Because it really didn't have a lot to do with Israel and the people of God and the second coming of the Messiah and the finishing up of all things. So there is this gap. There is this suspension of time, as it were. So if anybody ever tries to tell you that, oh, Israel doesn't matter to God anymore, that was all Old Testament stuff, that, you know, it's all spiritual now, it's the church and not Israel, and Israel's just a nation and she ought to be judged like everybody else, and we ought to put them on the same, you know, they have one seat in the council just like the Palestinians, just like everybody else. Don't believe it for a minute. God's clock is ticking. And amazingly, it only ticks when there's an Israel in existence. It's just, it's one of the brightest signs that you could possibly have. Another amazing thing would be a lot of people who call themselves Bible scholars totally miss it. It's like going out on a bright day and saying, "Where's the sun? I can't see it." Just getting lost in the middle of all this stuff. Which is further interesting, because how many know that Israel exists today? Now, between that time and between some of these great empires, even the Ottoman and the British Empire and so on and so forth, that was the way things were done. Empires took over where other empires got weak. Imperialization ran the world. To us, one world government is very foreign, but to our ancestors, it was common. And you went from one to another. Just tell me where I send the tax check. And what are the new requirements that we're supposed to follow here? But you and I are familiar with a world that has fought against imperialism. We have stood for the autonomy of different nations. The United States has gone to war in how many different places to say that this people can be a nation and should not be bullied by bigger nations around it. You know, if Vietnam wants to stay democratic, if South Korea doesn't want to go along with the communism in North Korea, if Bosnia and Herzegovina, whatever they call those places, and so on, we send troops. When Iraq invaded Kuwait, we went over and said, oh no, there's autonomy here. Nations need to be nations, and everybody stay in your borders, and we're going to be fine. No more imperialism. When Germany rose up and tried to take over the world rose up and said, no, 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 stop it. When Russia began her spiel, became the USSR, everybody said, go home. China flexing her muscles, everybody saying, stay home. No, no, everybody stay in your borders and everything is going to be fine. And so we've been raised in a world where we talk about independence, where we talk about autonomy, where we talk about the rights of people to have their own land. And when you put it all together, you really couldn't have done a better job to slam the door on Daniel's prophecies. There was no more Israel, and the world guarded against this one nation domination stuff. We're not going to have another empire, and we're all willing to go to war to make sure it doesn't happen, right? Boom. Lock that door with as many locks as you want to. How many know that God knows what he's talking about? Add to all what I've just said, Hitler trying to exterminate the Jews. Killed over 3 million of them. Not only was there not a Jewish state at the time, he was out to make sure that there weren't any Jews left to put it back together again. But God said differently. Now, in as a non-combatant way, we're watching as the old Roman Empire, remember the eggs? Remember those eggs of iron? Or maybe they're eggs of lion. Legs of iron. And the feet are what? Partly iron and partly clay. During our lifetime, we've been watching the old Roman Empire being reassembled again. Now, in order to appreciate this, you need to know a little bit about European history. Have you heard of a thing called the 50 Years' War? The 100 Years' War. Those both took place in Europe. To fight a war for 100 years, you got to be pretty serious about war. And don't you know you build up a little bit of bitterness toward your enemies? Add to that World War I, World War II. Where were those predominant? In Europe. The English, French, Italians, Poles, Spanish, Germans, Croats, Slovaks, on and on the list goes. They each had a different language, separate currency. Bitterness, mistrust, bad blood. They hated each other. The English and the French, they hated each other. Wars for decades and generations. Anybody with a brain could walk around 400,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago, and say, a united Europe? Yeah, right. That's impossible. 15, 20 years ago, when Jim Sabella became a missionary to Europe, when he started, every time you went from one country to another, you were stopped at a checkpoint, you had to show your passport, you had to exchange your currency, whatever you were using had to be exchanged to what the next country used, and then you were maybe allowed to pass. And they gave you a little bit of an attitude that you were in another person's country, and now you want to come into ours? Now, There are no checkpoints. You don't need a passport to go from one country to another. It's much like when we go from Pennsylvania to Ohio. You are now entering Ohio. Behave yourself or you'll get a ticket. You know, that kind of stuff. And have a nice day. How many different currencies are there in Europe right now? One. It's the euro. How many different languages? Well, there's a bunch. But strangely, they all speak each other's language, and English is becoming a predominant one throughout all their ranks. So listen again to Daniel's description of the last day's empire. Just as you saw that the feet and toes were partly of baked clay and partly of iron, so this will be a divided kingdom. Yet it will have some of the strength of iron in it, even as you saw iron mixed with clay. As the toes are partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. And just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, so the people will be a mixture and will not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay. I don't know if you saw any of the happenings in Greece this last summer. It was all over their economy tanking and their expectation that the European Union was going to bail them out and forgive debts and so on and so forth. And when the European Union came back with their first proposal, people took to the streets and they rioted, and it was a miserable, miserable scene for a while. You could not withdraw more than $60 from your bank account in any given day if you could get to, you know, up to the machine that was dispensing the money, and just a terrible, miserable time in Greece. And finally, then accords have been written, and those who were naysayers might have said, well, look, see, it's going to fall apart right now. There's no, you know, revived Roman Empire and all that kind of stuff. But they got it resolved, and they're back cousins again, doing all what they do. Now listen to verse 44. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. Now, of course, the European Union isn't done being reassembled. It hasn't risen to extreme prominence. There are other things that need to go on. But if you're as old as I am, you might recall this back in 1989, a Time magazine cover with Mikhail Gorbachev and George Bush smiling and shaking hands. And together they coined a new phrase for us, the New World Order. And they began to talk about a one world government. It was like listening to a duck sing opera music. A Russian president and a United States president talking about a one world government. And increasingly from then, we have been encouraged to think in terms of being a citizen of the world rather than being a citizen of a particular country. When I was a boy, talk like that was treasonous. But today, it is considered enlightened and moving forward. One of our candidates for president openly calls himself a socialist. He is a socialist, already a senator. Somebody voted him in, and intends to become president. Has our nation changed? This is a point of the prophecy you and I have watched while we've lived. It's in the nightly news. It's in the periodicals that come in the mail. It's in the newspaper. Most of the world is just going blindly down the alley whistling a happy tune. Where's God? Why should I trust in Him? What do you mean the Bible is the Word of God? Is there any proof? Open your eyes. Kirvin tells us that his company, the cement plant there between Spring Grove and York, already makes all of its calculations in euros because it's an international company. It was started here in the United States, but now it's making its computations in euros. I'm sure the same can be said for any international company that was founded here in the United States of America. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit about the last emperor that is going to rule on earth, and that'll be the end. That Sunday evening service will be the end of our series here on end times events. But there's your euro. Whose inscription is on it? By golly, that's the old Roman Empire and the territory, the major territory that she held. I'm just here to tell you this morning, these are the last days. Get ready. If you sowed any wild oats, be done with that. Get right with God. Get your family right with God. Look up. Our redemption draws near. Would you stand with me this morning?